You're listening to Comics with Kenobi.
It is episode number 77. We are post-Dragon Con, pre-New York Comic Con, and nothing but Star Wars, my man. Take it away, Jeff.
Geek me all knowing boxes stay open. May 4th, I'm hoping we're gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
Where am I supposed to take it?
To the next level.
Oh.
Like you too. Every podcast, you take it to the next level.
Every single one. The next level is sometimes up, sometimes down.
You always level it up for us, dude.
Yeah, I do my best. We're recording this on Labor Day, so if we both sound a little, it's because it's Labor Day, and we're laboring.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
For you, our faithful listeners. Unfortunate.
Always. We're happy to do it. But thankfully, we can ease you into this because not a whole lot of news in Star Wars comics in the last week or so. One thing to note is it looks like the lads behind a Star Wars comic are poised to announce the title of their next issue on September 11th, I think it is, if I'm reading that correctly. I'll have to double check.
But I thought it was the 17th.
Was it 17th? It may have
been
the
17th.
Within the next week.
Right. Sorry,
sometime between September 1st and September 30th, we will have the title of their next issue.
I'm betting it's something Star Wars related.
I'm going to differ with you on this one. I think this is the month that Alex and Jim throw us for a loop and give us that long, long sought after mishmash between The Last Starfighter and a black hole.
I think you're right. It is the 11th. I apologize. It's issue number 17 on the 11th. See, you throw too many numbers my way and things get confused.
1, 9, 15, 22, 37.
I heard 37.
That? All right. Okay. Fair enough.
not a whole lot of news. So
you know what else?
What else?
No, but it's been fun. And what we do need to let some fans out there know, even though we don't cover the Star Wars Adventures comic books on this podcast, we save that for the Young Padawans episodes. Michael Morrissey, who if you're not following on Twitter, I highly recommend you should do so. His issue is coming out later this month, and his story features Bazine, and it looks like IG-88, and it's been a lot of fun because we retweeted his tweet. Of course, that got some traffic, and people were pretty stoked about that. He says that his story in this issue of Star Wars Adventures is set during the sequel trilogy era, and of course, everyone was just like, "Oh yeah, this is going to be great." So, looking forward to that. And of course, if you recall, you will remember Bazine from The Force Awakens, when they landed at Maz Kanata's castle on Takadana, because she was the one in sort of like the jester style outfit who was leaning up against the very large creature,
right?
And she contacted the First Order to let them know that a BB-8 droid had been seen, not just a BB-8 droid, but Han and Finn.
Yeah.
Yes. So, looking forward to that one. That's going to be a fun up. That's going to be a fun up. So, it's going to be a fun issue. And apparently, it's a three-parter. He tweeted. So, can't wait for that one.
Excellent.
You know what else I couldn't wait for?
What's that?
The Poe Dameron Annual Number 2.
Yes, because we do have two books to discuss this week. We have the Poe Dameron Annual Number 2, and we have Lando Double or Nothing Number 4. And this Poe Dameron Annual, it's nice because we basically get a stay of execution on the end of the series, because we have one more monthly issue to come.
I guess this is the actual penultimate issue of the Poe Dameron series, as opposed to issue number 30, because we have issue 31 coming out later this month, which is going, September 26th is going to be the final issue of the Poe Dameron series.
Sad day. But yes, we this annual this cover is wonderful. This is amazing.
It is, isn't it?
who the cover artist on this was Rod.
Rice. Rod Rice.
I apologize, Rod. I never get your name right. I before Rod E is the guy always messes me up.
Rod is the guy who does the Galactic Icons variants.
Okay.
And of course, this cover. I mean, this is the best cover of Tiger Beat I've seen in a long time. The only cover better than the only Tiger Beat cover better was the one with Ox.
Right. Yes. So. Dewey Oxburger. But yeah, this is wonderful.
And if you're listening and you understand what that is, send us a direct message. First three correct references to the film, we'll send you a free Star Wars comic. Not a digital code, an actual, honest to goodness Star Wars comic.
A floppy, as the kids call it.
Bagged and boarded. Now, it may not have a digital code because it's part of the personal collection, and we give away the digital codes to you, the listeners, and those who follow us on Twitter and Facebook. So the first three, go nuts.
And DMs you get unlimited cool points for knowing that reference as well.
Exactly.
But yeah, this cover.
That's the fact.
That's the fact, Jack. So this cover, though, it is very heroic. Looks just like Oscar Isaac, and it is wonderful.
It is. And of course, there was a variant cover by Declan Shalvey and Triona Farrell, which was a very action oriented cover. That showed Han and Chewie, and as well as Poe. And yes, I broke the rule again. I bought the variant.
It's really more of a guideline these days.
I don't even think it's a guideline. I just
So this
tell myself I'm standing for the stands. You know, I don't
right.
need the variant. I don't. I really don't. Yeah, I'll take the variant.
So this was written by Jody Houser. Artist
it was.
Was Andrea Brocardo, mm-hmm. which we will talk about in a minute. Colorist Stephanie Renee. Letterer.
Yes,
I'll let you say the letterer because I love the way you say his name.
VC's Joe Caramagna. And then, of course, assistant editor Tom Groneman, editor Mark Petticchia. And, of course, we talked about Rod and Declan and Triona doing the covers.
Yes, and this seems to be taking place prior to The Force Awakens.
Yes, it does, doesn't
believe,
it? Isn't that
because,
great?
Yeah, because it says it's annual number two. General Organa gets their the crawl talks about General Organa forming the resistance to defend the vulnerable New Republic and stem the tide of the First Order's power. But support for the movement has been hard to secure. Even Leia's husband, Han Solo, has left the rebel life and returned to his smuggling ways, which we see at the beginning of The Force Awakens. And we see here that Leia now relies on new allies like famed pilot Poe Dameron, his trusty droid BB-8, and skilled pilots of Black Squadron. I'm having trouble reading tonight.
You are.
So this opens with someone that I assume is supposed to be Princess Leia, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, the hair is definitely Princess Leia.
The hair.
The face,
I,
not so much.
You know me. I'm never one to denigrate the work of anyone who's trying to create art. The backgrounds in this are great. The technology, the ships, everything is great. I love the colors. But the facial work on this book is, it's amateurish to me. Nothing is symmetrical, which human faces aren't symmetrical, but they're not even, they don't even look balanced. If I didn't know it was supposed to be Princess Leia and Poe Dameron, I wouldn't assume that that's who it was.
Yeah, this is a little jarring, which is, it's hard for me to say that because Andrea Brocardo is a fairly accomplished artist. What has thrown me, at least, from the opening page is how massive the foreheads are on all the characters.
Yes.
Because, it seems like, the eyes and the nose and the mouth are all lost because they're just very small, coupled onto these enormous noggins.
The eyes, nose, and mouth are islands in the middle of a face, of a sea of face.
They are. Now, again, I don't want to denigrate him because, he's a professional and, he gets paid to do this and has been hired numerous times to do so. So it just seemed like it was a little off this issue.
Yeah, it's a style.
We'll
it's
have
a definite
to see.
Style, but I just not one that I appreciate.
It's a definite style, but I'm just curious what the kind of reaction is going to be when he Andrea is doing a fill in on Star Wars number 56 out, which is out November 7th. you know, of course, you know, he's, you know, that's because, you know, Salvador La Roca is leaving the book after issue number 55. And, you know, people who were complaining about the way Salva draws faces, and then those same people were, you know, complaining about the way Andrea draws faces. You know, it's just not going to be any joy in Mudville. So
right. And you know me, my whole thing is, even if I don't care for the style, as long as it's consistent, I can deal with it. But there's not even any consistency even from panel to panel here. And so I don't know if it was a rush job. No. I don't know. I assume that the work is typically better than this. Didn't ruin the book for me. It's a great story, but it certainly didn't help the story.
No. You know, the story is solid, and the it's a solid book. You know, if we were doing a letter grade, I would definitely give this book a B. But yeah, just, you know, just again, it's just the way that some of the facial representations, they were a little too much for me. Now that's like you said, you know, the ships looked good, the backgrounds looked good, the flow of the art looked good. So I can't complain about that at all, because, you know, it seemed pretty obvious to me that you know, especially the colors, you know, Stephanie Renee's colors,
wonderful,
were quite good. You know, they really helped make this book what it was. But, you know, we've gotten that. We've said that. We've laid out our chief constructive criticism is just the way the faces are drawn. Now that said, the story, Jody Hauser has written a fabulous story.
Yeah, I love this story.
And again, Jody Hauser is she has done just an amazing job here, telling us a story that's not a part of the ongoing Poe Dameron series, as it were, but adds a lot of wonderful detail, and I don't even want to say context. It's not context. I mean, she just adds another layer to the events of the sequel trilogy.
It's connective tissue.
Story, because, you know, it's more than connective tissue. I mean, this is flesh and bone. This isn't cartilage by any means. She has really, you know, she's built a solid story here that, I mean, they could have easily, you know, based an entire 4-issue miniseries on what she's done in this annual.
Right, and it's very well paced. So just a quick rundown of the story. C-3PO is using his spy network, which he refers to as, former accurate to call it, an information network. He has found out that there are some plans for what they call it, ancient blueprints of a superweapon. And I wonder if the term ancient means something different to them than it does to
us.
Oh,
I think it's probably... Well, you know, I think it's so much, you know, because it may be ancient, but still functional.
Right.
This is basically the First Order discovering Starkiller Base, if you will.
Oh, they're afraid that they're going to, right.
Because, you know, they haven't seen Starkiller Base yet. It hasn't been used. It's been hiding out there in the wild. You know, there's been rumors of something going on, and this is setting up these rumors. And the way Jody has written C-3PO, we know that C-3PO is more than just a protocol droid, thanks to that one shot from a couple years back. You know, we know that he was and likely still is, in contextually speaking or chronologically speaking, a rather robust espionage network of droids. And to me, that's what really makes this book come, is, you know, we find out more detail about C-3PO. You know, C-3PO is not just a supporting character. You know, C-3PO is a foundational member of the Star Wars saga cast.
The rebellion,
even
the
more
resistance.
So now in the sequel trilogy. Yeah, and I love how you know during the course of the first couple of pages, you know, C-3PO is talking to Poe. It's almost as if C-3PO is being evasive, you know.
He is. He's being very, like a gangster talking about that thing with the place. You know, if I were to have a network of spies, they might have told me that there was a deal going down and it might be taking place here. If I knew such a thing, that's what I would tell you.
Oh, yeah. No. And just, I do want to throw out the fact that I love the fact that they were true to continuity, and he still has the red arm.
Right. I love the fact that the C-3PO's appendages are the indicator of where a story falls. The color.
Hey, why not?
You know, appendages. That's a... great. Yeah, it's a great visual cue. And so the deal involves a Kudon trader named Mech Kutiv, I suppose, who looked like a Bothan to me. I always thought that's what Bothans looked like.
Mekhnutiv. Yeah, I thought it was a Bothan as well, but, you know, I guess Kudan is Kudan.
Right.
Kudan or...
Kodan Armada. Kodan Armada.
And so this
is not a reference to the last Starfighter, but...
So the Kudan, who is a female, based on the art here, which is great. The art of this character, I think, is wonderful. But has obtained a data archive that, if our information is correct, it dates back to a time before the rise of the Empire. And she's planning to meet with a detachment from the First Order. So they've decided to send Black Squadron out to intercept the archive disguised as smugglers. And so, they're doing it in such a way that she won't know that the Resistance was involved, and it will help keep her neutral in our efforts against the First Order. So they won't stop trusting her, which I think is a great idea. It's a wonderful add-on to their plan. And well,
they have to play their assets close to the vest, because remember that, you know, and the time frame in which this is, you know, is, you know, the Resistance is kind of tacitly acknowledged by the New Republic, but not really.
Right.
You know, it's like, yeah, Leia, you go off and do your thing, and, you know, we won't, we'll promise you money, but not really give you money, but, you know, oh, hey, there's people throughout the space who would love to maybe, you know, throw a little scratch your way.
Right.
So, and, you know, by the way, the First Order is not a problem because, you know, they're so far out of here.
When I love that Poe says, 3PO, are you telling me that you have planned an actual heist? Of course not, sir. Such illicit activities are well beyond my programming. This plan is merely the most efficient means by which the Resistance can recover illicit goods from a known criminal. It's great. And Poe says, this data, we don't know for sure how dangerous it really is. And Leia says, information is always dangerous, Poe, which is great. And so from there, we cut to the Flugi clan shipyard, and we see who I believe is supposed to be Han and Chewie in an Imperial shuttle of some sort.
Yeah.
It is. I'm just giving the artist a hard time here. Again, it looks vaguely like Han and vaguely like Chewie.
I think if you look in the dictionary and the definition of subtle snark, you will find your photograph, Jeff.
I don't think that's accurate at all. Oh, you're being sarcastic. I get it. And so they're double-crossing someone, as always. And he says the Flugi clan won't want to advertise that they were moving First Order equipment. And Chewie says something, and Han says, well, reasonably sure. And then we get another one, and he says, more sure than that. So,
oh.
So there we find out that they're planning to meet with McTeeve. And
They have codes from Fenway.
They have codes, and he says, basically, they're trying to look like First Order people, so they've stolen a First Order shuttle. And he says, if we can pull the score off, we'll get at least one of the people we owe money to off our backs. And Chewie assumingly says, who? And he says, whoever we run into first, particularly if they have more blasters than us, which I love. And so then we
tell that to Kanji Club.
Right. So. And so then we cut back to Black Squadron, and they're looking at these, what they're calling ancient ships, these junkers that they're supposed to be pulling this job in, because they can't look like... They have to look like smugglers or pirates. I said, no one can know Black Squadron was over there.
Like,
if things go according to plan, we'll be in and out before they have a chance to hit back. And one of them, I can't ever keep, I guess it's Kari, says, when has anything actually gone according to plan? And he says,
great,
I thought...
And great follow-up.
And that's with our regular fighters, yeah. And Poe, of course, says, and I thought it was the pilots that made Black Squadron, not the ships. And we get a nice touche moment.
that's pretty good. And I love the... I like how they look at Snap and they all three look back at Poe.
Yeah.
that was a wonderful line, you know.
So I like that we get a nice flashback between Poe and Lulo, who was sort of his mentor, flying together. And they're talking about what they would do after the war. And Luella says, imagine being one of those Duros who first reached for the star, something no one had seen just because they could. He's trying to figure out what I'm going to do, space exploration, after this is over. And Poe says, there's always the unknown regions. And Luella says, it's a nice thought, but you don't get to choose what the galaxy needs pilots for, just why you fly.
But you know what makes it even more stirring, though, is, you know, the way Poe says, there's always the unknown regions after the Resistance wins the war.
Yeah, it's that
optimism. Which clearly ain't the case.
Right. Well, we don't know that yet.
No, we don't know that. And can I just say, I love seeing Lulu back in action again.
I know, I was glad. It was a nice callback.
It was a wonderful callback.
Character that I really liked and I miss. So, and I love these ships that they're flying in. They look really cool.
These old ships?
Yeah.
They do. I mean, and these are all ships that we've seen before. I really liked how Jody did this, you know, breaking down, all right, the pilot and the ship. You know, Cara Coon is in a V-19 Torrent. Jessica Pava is in an ARC 170. Poe Dameron in a Z-95 Headhunter. Snap Wexley, an ETA-2 Actus Interceptor, you know, which is essentially that's the ship that Anakin and Obi-Wan flew. At the beginning of Revenge of the Sith.
It's kind of the Jedi Starfighter, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, but I love this. This is a wonderful nod to, you know, the Legends titles, you know, and to have these old ships, you know, of course, the ARC 170 is canon. You know, Z-95, you know, has can't say with assuredness that it's always been canon, but I know it's always been around. You know, I remember when they had the first teaser that J.J. Abrams did when he was making The Force Awakens to announce the fundraising thing, and they showed him on the set, and they showed, you know, and you saw the ship in the background with the pilot getting into it, and a lot of people thought, oh my God, it's a Z-95 Headhunter. You know, it turned out it wasn't, obviously.
Right.
But, and then, of course, you had to have this V-19 Torrent. You know, this makes me feel so great. I love the fact that she brought these ships into this comic book, into the sequel trilogy era. So anyway, I digress. Let me step back from my incredulity.
No, but it's great. No, it's great. Snap even makes a point. He says, I can barely handle this thing. I'm no Jedi. And I love that. Jessica that says, at least I don't have to worry about losing another astromech or a co-pilot or a gunner.
Which means, and that's, you know, for longtime readers of Poe Dameron, they will get that, and I'm sure, you know, those of you who are out there who have been reading this book from the beginning chuckled aloud at that line, you know, given her relationship with Astromech.
Right.
And then, of course, we have, you know, yeah, and then, you know, Poe's in his headhunter, and, you know, there's BB-8, but, you know, I don't think Z-95s have astromech hatches,
they don't. They don't, and that's why he's just down kind of in the guts of the ship. Now we cut from there to Mech Nutiv's cruiser, which looks like a Star Destroyer on steroids. It's really cool looking.
Again, yeah, I like this a lot. You know, Andrea Brocardo has done a great job drawing these ships.
Yes.
Just a really fabulous job.
And on board the ship, we have Han dressed up as a First Order officer, you know, kicking all kinds of attitude. And he says, okay, I'm supposed to take you at your word that you have the merchandise. And Mech says, the one who wields the blaster makes the rules. I'm really making sure your line of credit is as good as you say. And he says, if you can't trust the First Order, who can you trust? And, of course, she looks at him and says, this isn't right. So when does the First Order work with a half-rate slicer like Finwedge? So, of course, Han cheaping out in a slicer is his undoing. And she realizes they've got a fraud on her hands.
As always. You know, yeah, he's cutting the corners to try to save an ex.
And so, of course, Han opens fire to try to get away. They're running away. He goes, well, that went well. And then, of course, Chewie's complaining. He says, well, he was the only one we could afford. And so I guess they picked up on the blasters, or no, they didn't, because the ship's coming in. They're not seeing any First Order ships there, and they say either we beat the First Order here or they're already on board. More than likely the former.
Exactly.
It would be very unusual for them to go into a negotiation without a fleet at their back. And so it says, BB-8 ready to show off our little upgrade. Let's turn off the lights. And so they go completely silent. Now, they don't go silent, but they basically fry the ship somehow.
Yeah, they hit it with ions. With an ion cannon.
You know,
with the equivalent of an ion cannon.
Yeah. And so on board,
you know,
the
ship, an ion torpedo or whatever.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, right, because even Mech says on the next page, ion cannon fire. And, of course, she thinks that they're there with Han and Chewie, so they're trying to kill them all. And Han says, Chewie's asking who it is, and Han says, beats me, Fluji Clan, whoever it is, this just became a race. Come on. And from there, Mech's fighters come in, and her fighters look really cool. Those paint jobs on the thing, the blue with the green and pink neon, it's really, really cool. I'd love to get some toys of that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of hoping that maybe the folks that make X-Wing, the Fantasy Flight Games, hope they make that really wonderful X-Wing miniatures game.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, just make a cool little blister pack offering.
That would be cool. And so Poe decides Poe has to basically almost crash land on the ship in the Headhunter while the rest of the squad keeps the fighters busy. And he gets descended upon by Mech and her men. And she says, "Are you with them?" And he goes, "I don't know who them is. Never been much of a follower." And she says, "Whoever is playing at being First Order." As well, if I can't make them pay for this mess. And, of course, BB-8 to the rescue shocks her from behind. And then yes. Poe echoes Han. He says, "Let's hurry. I think this just became a race." And I love that little echoing behind it. And so Han and Chewie find the data banks. He opens the archives. He opens it up, and he says, "Wait, this is..." And he sees something inside that makes him say, "Leia."
And this right here, this is the defining page of this annual. This is what makes this annual so worthwhile. Because this is nostalgia, nostalgia, nostalgia. This is for fans from the very beginning to a week ago. This is for the fans of Leia. This is for the fans of Ben Kenobi, of Kylo Ren, of Han and Leia. I love this.
Can I have one criticism? I don't like Han's beard. I don't like Han's beard.
Well, but I love the fact that Han has a beard.
I don't. Han.
You ever seen
Han has a look, and Han sticks with that look. Han is not someone who experiments with his look.
Maybe he's in a Lando phase.
Right. Again, it's not my cup of tea. I understand that, it's nice that he, had a beard phase, but
I gotta admit that the beard phase, he looks like Neil Gaiman.
He does. Doesn't look like Han. Uh-oh. But
these four panels, I think we just figured out who else is here. And, A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Aftermath, after the Return of the Jedi. And he says, the Resistance. And then we get that bottom panel of that page, we hear Poe, "Come on, BB," and we see his shadow. And then Han, this was great. This is so unlike Han. Let's clear them a path quietly for once. Right. And you have to remember, this is set. He's not seen Leia in a while. They've had that falling out over Ben Solo.
And I think that's why he says quietly for once, because he doesn't want Leia to know he was involved.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because he doesn't want to have to see her.
But at the same time, it's also, that love he has for her is still strong.
Absolutely.
And vital.
Absolutely.
And he's just, because, I think he doesn't want to see her because of, he thinks that she blames him for the loss of Ben.
Right.
Or that he was not a good enough dad to keep Ben in the fold. So, which is not true.
Right. So. Not at all. So, Poe finds the archive. And he says, "Our First Order friends, or whoever they really are, must have gotten held up. Well, let's not wait around to find out." We see the people that are following him get taken out in between panels. So he grabs it and they start running.
Which is great,
It's great. It is great. It's really great. And Chewie is asking Han why they're doing it, and Han says it's the right play. They'll make sure it gets back to her. Resistance must have caught wind of trade, thought the First Order was actually involved. At least we fooled somebody. I love that. At least we fooled somebody.
Yeah.
And he says, "You better start broadcasting as friendly. I'd hate to get shot out of the sky on top of everything else." So they've lost the score, but have gained some karma points, one would assume.
Yes. Oh, very much so.
And I love that. So, the Black Squadron is holding their own outside. Poe gets back to the ship, and our clunker's held up, they say. They say, "Mech ships had the paint job, but not the pilots."
That's pilots a great line.
Not the ships, yeah. And he says, "I'm not surely..." And back at the base, he tells Leia, "Honestly, I'm not sure how we got away with it, General." And she says, it could be that whoever you encountered was there for something else. And he says, maybe, but the fact that they knew we were resistance, if they'd really wanted this, they had plenty of time to get it. And he says, and firepower too. Some of the damage was done by some kind of projectile weapon, maybe a mag rifle. And at that point, I think Leia knows, because she says, I guess we'll never know, but I think she knows, oh, that was a bowcaster.
Because she's been with Chewie enough to know the effects of his weapon and the fact that not many people use projectile weapons in the galaxy anymore. So, but the only problem is, you know, the way her face is drawn, we can't really tell if she knows.
Right. So she says, so now let's see.
If this were Angel Unzueta drawing it, we would know just by the way of her facial pattern.
Right.
So.
And she says, let's see if this was worth all the trouble. She opens it up and posts it. Is that? She goes, I've been afraid to hope the rumors were true. The archive of the Great Library of Alderaan, or what's left of it. And I love this flashback to Alderaan. Her father, she says, about the data collections archive was smuggled off planet by librarians who feared an imperial takeover. Because her father would take me there anytime he had free time, we went to this archive. And she says, they had no idea the fate of Alderaan. They waited Alderaan, of course. How could they? They only knew the war was coming. And then all of a sudden, little Leia is an manga kid. And Poe says, you knew this was what we were after the whole time? She says, I didn't know for sure, but I suspected. He says, but how can you even think of selling something like this? Your home, she says, is long gone. If the data, if any, survive, can always be copied now that it's secure. The physical archive itself is what collectors will pay a high price for. And I can think of no better way to honor the memory of my home than to fight the same kind of evil that destroyed it. And I love that background of the Death Star behind her as she's saying, and she's absolutely right. The information is what's important. The physical files, if they can be sold, by all means, and she's going to sell that off to help fund the resistance. So it turns out C-3PO isn't bad at scheming.
Nope, not at all.
Which I always kind of suspected.
C-3PO should take that as a compliment.
Yes.
He really should.
Yeah, so, he says, I'm not sure entirely if I should take this really compliment, and Leia says, in this case, you absolutely should. So then we have the end, and we get another reminder of the cover for the final issue of Poe Dameron at the end of the month. So, again, really good story. The execution on the art left something to be desired, but, again, overall, didn't destroy my enjoyment of it. I just was a little surprised at the lack of polish on the art.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and here's the great thing about this annual, is Jody Houser. She's the one who set the bar so high when she wrote the adaptation of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And she sort of kept that bar going when she wrote the adaptation of Thrawn as well. And now this, a completely original Star Wars story, not adaptation of a book, this was her work. This has got me so stoked for because she's writing Star Wars Age of Republic, that 8-issue series that's going to be part of that sort of 30-issue arc that Marvel is doing next, starting in December, where we have the 8 issues of Age of Republic, and then we have Age of Rebellion, then we have Age of Resistance. And I'm, based on what she has written with this issue, that Age of Republic miniseries, that book is in fine, fine hands. With Jody writing it, I think it's going to be awesome.
Should be really, really good. And with that, we will move on to the 4th issue of the Lando Double or Nothing miniseries, which has been a lot of fun. Yeah, I'm still not sure that I like it better than the previous Lando miniseries we got with the Emperor's Archive, but this has been a lot of fun, and it's been fun to see a different version of Lando, an even more brash and even more conceited version of Lando than we even got in that other book.
Well, and I think it's important that you say something like that, because you have to remember, the first Lando miniseries by Charles Soule, and I believe it was Alex Maleev, that was a tale of a Lando that we knew about, and it gave us that story essentially of, how Lobot became Lobot. But it also gave us a better look into how Lando was able to do what he was able to do. And of course, with all the Sith relics, particularly Moomin,
right.
it's had a lot of impact, especially what we're seeing in the pages of Darth Vader Volume 2. What Rodney Barnes, the writer, of Lando Double or Nothing has been doing has been giving us yet another story about Lando, but you know, at a younger stage in his life, when as you said, rightfully so, he's a lot more brash, a lot more uber self-confident, you know, even has delusions of grandeur. And I like that, and I need that, because, you know, Lando is a very complex character. He has got a lot of ebb and flow that people don't realize. I mean, we saw him in The Empire Strikes Back, where he was somewhat engaging and duplicitous, yet at the same time was kind of going on his own, you know, hero's journey, and of course that spilled over into Return of the Jedi in a big way. He leads the Rebel Armada, in the assault on the second Death Star, going all the way in with Wedge and the others to help destroy it, facing certain death. And this story, it's a little more lighthearted, it's a lot more action oriented. And more importantly, it's a whole lot of great space fantasy. You know, this is akin, and I think I've said this before about this miniseries. This is something that I would have watched, you would have seen as a serial, in the 1940s or 50s.
Yeah.
This would not breakfast food.
Right.
This is something that would have been, this would almost be a great movie in and of itself were it to be a film. Or even, something for, Disney's upcoming streaming network. And I like that. And that's, while I think the first Lando series had a lot more depth, that in no way, should yardstick the first Lando miniseries with the second Lando miniseries, because they're the same character, but they're wonderful examples of how that character can be so dramatically and even radically different at different points in their lives. Now, that said, Rodney Barnes should forever write any L337 dialogue ever.
Agreed.
And no matter the medium. So, but I digress. So we are, we are in part four. As we said, written by Rodney Barnes, art by Paolo Villanelli, colors by Andre Mosa, letters by VC's Joe Caramagna. Cover artist for the main issue, or for the main cover, is W. Scott Forbes. Love this work. The variant cover artist is David Nakayama. Did not get the variant cover of this, only because the shop did not have it. But if you can get a copy of it for a good price, do so. It's a solid cover. And then, of course, I love this. The logo design by Summer Lacey and Carlos Lau. And as we said, with the other book, Tom Grodeman is the assistant editor. Mark Paniccia is the editor. And it starts off, again, almost in serial format. We get a nice little update of what's going on and where we've been the last three issues, and boom, and we get our quick character summary. Lando, L337 Christus,
and it opens up right where the other one left off. The Falcon is being chased by a bunch of TIE fighters, and Lando has a plan to fake a crash. He decided the easiest way to get away from them is to take the Falcon into the canyon. And the L3 says, so your idea is to crash the Falcon? He goes, no, just to make it appear that way. The explosion will seal the deal. Explosion? Might we attempt to fool them while remaining among the living? And they really are like an old married couple.
They are. And again, this is such great dialogue that Rodney has written here.
And I love that, Lando is planning. He says, we get past these fighters, get to Christus, and get paid. The rest will take care of itself. And L3 says, excuse me for being focused on this present moment, but you do see the massive formation ahead, right? And so he makes it work. He makes the TIE fighters think that he's crashed. And L3 says, exceptional shot. I've noticed your marksmanship improves exponentially when I'm present. And he says, can't you just stop with the compliment? And he says, and I'm not shy. I just prefer the straightforward approach. Is that a good thing? Because in the middle of all this, they're talking about it's basically his feelings for her before that. And she says, he says, is that a good thing? And she says, I'll never tell. And so they find a sewage expulsion port nearby, which just sounds gross. And Lando says sewage expulsion. And I love that L3's response is, I'd suggest going capeless on this journey.
I think that's a smart way to do it. It really is just a smart way to do it. You got to get in there somehow. and you want to do it in the way that's not going to draw a lot of attention to you. So why not go up to the guard? Why not go? Yeah, yeah. You're going to Shawshank it.
You're going to reverse Shawshank it. Yeah.
Good one, dude.
And I love that Lando, he says, the style is a signature component of the Calrissian legend. Filth diminishes that legendary status. L3 was right. This is no place for a cape. And I love this panel at the top of its digital page 6, where he's walking into it and the water is just rushing past him. Something about that image, I just love it. The way the shadows are falling on me, it's really good. And he says, the difference between me and other men of adventure is that I don't scare easily. And then something happens, and he says, okay, now I'm scared. And there are a bunch of spiders. And have we talked about how much I hate spiders on this show? Because I've talked about it on just about every other show I'm on. I hate spiders. Hate spiders. If I see a spider, I freak out. Even if it's just a picture of a spider. I hate spiders, even if they're mechanical. Anything that has less legs than me and more legs than my dog, I have no use for. And so we get a bunch of robot spiders that apparently can't be blasted because he kills them, and then they Voltron into a big giant spider, which is even worse than a bunch of little spiders. Only spider that I've ever been able to stomach was Shelob in Lord of the Rings. Somehow. No idea how, but in that film, I could handle the spider.
You like Shelob. You want to date her.
Gross. And so he manages to, he says, I abhor violence. That said, I'd say the situation clearly warrants an exception. He blows it apart and then gets away before it starts putting itself back together. So he makes his way through and finds his way to a data port that apparently is not manned. I guess there's just nobody working the expulsion chamber tonight. And so he finds her, and he finds her and her dad while they're on a break. And he uses L3 to shut down all of the security fields and everything in between the level he's at and the level he's going to. So he finds them on a break at the droid facility. And the dad just starts talking smack to Lando right off the bat.
A big time talking smack. Yeah. I mean, because he's not impressed here at all. You know, despite, you know, everything that his daughter has told him.
Yeah.
And it's really bad. I'm just surprised.
It's really, yeah. And so she finds it, they call it as her respite. And she says, how'd you get in here? He says, never ask the best at something how he does it. He just does it because he's the best. And she says, the truth, please. I had L3 kill the security monitor so it wouldn't be detected. Smart, huh? And her dad is all of a sudden, you entrusted this man with our freedom. And Elena was just like, look, if you don't want my help, you can get back there and disassemble droids until your fingers are as hard as theirs. And she says, my father is used to your kind of personality. I'm like...
And this I thought was, you know, wow. You know, because, you know, Lando is, you know...
Just hands it right back to him. And this is one time when I think he's perfectly in the right.
He is. He's perfectly in the right here. He calls him out. He's like, look, dude, you don't seem to be doing really well. At all. So...
And
just,
so,
but that line, yeah, I mean, yeah. That line is just
you know, what he prefers, the kind that allows his planet to be taken over by the Empire and reduces his people to slaves. And her dad's like, there's no shame in being a slave. The shame is in accepting one's fate. He goes, is there shame in rankling the only hope you've got to get off this funky dust ball? I should not have judged you prematurely. He says, you're under duress. The presence of greatness is intimidating, I'm sure. Apology accepted. And they shake hands. So this is sort of, I think this is where we see kind of the real Lando. Because this is sort of the guy who does have a heart and does care about people. But then he's still got this veneer that he has to keep up. And so they decide to, the best way to get everybody on board is to somehow for Lando to make an inspiring speech. I didn't really follow all of this, but apparently they haven't talked to the people about their plan yet, which just, this whole thing just seems a little poorly thought out to me. Did
yeah,
you get
this
that as
just,
well?
Yeah, it just, it's almost like we needed another page about this. I mean, because we didn't get a lot of setup, you know, because, you know, Rythus says basically, you know, look, you know, the Petrusians are a peaceful people. They're resistant to engage in warfare. And you would think that, you know what, you're enslaved, and you know you're their, you know, sort of pretty much their leader. You should be talking them up big time right now, you know, saying, look, we can't deal. We got to get out of this, and we have to work together to do this. And you know, we're going to get some help, but you know, you got to step up to make this happen. And then of course, you know, Lando is like, all right, well, you know, he's got the charisma. He's got the, right. You know, he's got the ability. He knows how to spin a good yarn, as he has said multiple times, in film and books and comics now, and so he does make that speech. But I just kind of thought, you know, it just seemed a little off for him to start off like he's doing a stand up routine. You know, how's everybody doing tonight? Thanks for coming. First, let me say, you know, it's like, wait, all right, come on.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
This would have been better, I think, if he was a little more direct and to the point, you know, almost, you know, doing that sort of, you know, a stirring speech, you know, to rile and rouse him.
This should be a Malcolm X speech.
Well, not just a Malcolm X speech. I mean, this should just be an inspirational speech.
Well, yeah, we didn't land on Hoth. Hoth landed on us. That's what I mean. It should have been something along those lines. It's what I mean by a Malcolm X speech, rather than, you know, again, starting out. And I guess it's a way of him of showing that he's kind of getting his footing, trying to get his footing, and he finally makes it work. And I don't buy that it does work. That's my only problem with this whole section is I don't buy that it works. Like, it was that easy.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe they had to hear it from an outsider. You know, they'd already heard it from Rythus. You know, maybe by hearing it from an outsider, you know, somebody who has, you know, because, you know, they don't know he's getting paid. You know? So they're thinking, all right, look, this guy has done everything, and he's come in here to help us, so let's see what we can do. Let's, you know, all right, let's do this.
You know, I really like the image of the fist raise where they're yelling "yeah" on digital page 15 at the top. That's a really, really nice image.
I like that too. That's really good. And I like the way it's colored too.
Yeah, it's really
good. You know, especially the way you have the lines in the background. You know, Paolo and Andre have it just sort of melded all that. And you can see because you can see the motion of the fists rising into the air.
So. And one thing
You see it all in the background. One thing you didn't mention was what? What did you
one
not
thing
mention?
I didn't,
Tell me.
One
now.
Thing I didn't mention, I'm trying to mention it now, is that before he goes in to make the speech, she tells him to lie, and he says, lie? Do I look like a liar? Yes. And he says, I'm hurt. Okay, I just lied. That's Lando. I love that.
That's vintage Lando. I love that line. That's awesome.
And so he gets them all riled up, and then she says, now what? I'm like, I thought you guys had a plan. He says, I've got to get the weapons off the Falcon and in their hands. I just don't, this seems like, do they have time to do all of this? And so they get there, he gets back, and L3 says, are you ready? And L3 says, I was taking a nap. Oh, wait, droids aren't allowed to nap. Get the ship to the sewage pipe now, on my way, Captain. I love this image of the Falcon taking off. It's great. And L3 gets the Falcon in with the weapons, and they have a nice moment. She shares a nice moment with him here when she hands him back his cape. Because we have this great scene where they're slashing everybody, the people are revolting, and they're fighting off the spider is what it is, and the Falcon comes in and blows it to pieces, and she says, she gives him his cape. She goes, let's hope we never have to find out the answer to that question. One more thing. And he says, what would I do without you? She says, let's hope we never have to find out the question. One more thing. I like you better in this. And she hands him a cape, which is wonderful. And he says, thanks, but I look good in anything. Can't you just stop at the compliment, Lando? But I loved that moment. It was a nice moment. It didn't take any time, but it was, and it felt earned. And I think it really just, sort of cemented their relationship. And so then from
it
there
does.
We see we get the beginnings of their revolt. So we see all the troops about to change up, doing a shift change or whatever, and he's talking to Christus over the intercom, and she says, a troop transfer is happening, we have to strike now, and he says, we're ready. And he says, so are we. And so when most of the troopers have left, Her dad tells him, "We'll take our positions. When you give the word, the protrusions will strike, Captain Calrissian." And he says, "Well, what happens next determines whether the galaxy will be deprived of its most interesting asset, me." There's really nothing to say after that. And we get this great moment of them sneaking through the sewer, and this voiceover, which I'm assuming is Lando. He said, "There's something I've noticed about people that are enslaved by the will of others. Although under their thumb of their master, the fire within them yearns for freedom, independence, awaiting the moment when it can no longer be contained." And as he's saying this, we're seeing them get the drop on several different sets of stormtroopers. And so then he raises his fist and says, "Protrusions, your freedom begins now," as he gets all of the stormtroopers' attention, and then we get the "to be continued." So this was a great lead up to this battle. This was the montage of them prepping for battle, and then right as we get there, "to be continued." Great place to end this book. And especially since, do we have one more issue or two more?
One more. It's a five
issue. One more. Okay. So, yeah, really, really great. I really enjoyed this one. Like I said, I didn't necessarily buy the speech, but everything before and after that, I was on board for. What about you?
I love it. I'm really enjoying this a lot. It's striking every chord that I wanted this Lando miniseries to strike. You know, it's got fun, brisk adventure. It's got very brash, bold Lando, and I'm thoroughly entertained by it. I mean, it makes me laugh aloud sometimes.
And it's got some serious content in it too that is working well.
Does. It's got some. It is a very earnestly written and produced series so far, and I'm really stoked to see how it's all going to end. Because there's a couple of ways it could end: very, very well, or very, very badly.
So, pretty sure Lando and L3 make it out alive, but other than that, we're not sure.
Yeah, well, we know that, but still, I think it's going to be pretty cool.
Great. So, and then we get a nice cover for next issue is going to be cool. We'll talk about that next month when the book comes out.
But I'm looking forward to it.
So, yeah, I highly recommend that one. And again, the Poe Dameron annual, if you can get past the artwork, I think it's a worthy read as well.
No, even if you're not a fan of the art, you still need to read this annual. It's a really well written annual, and it's a very well executed annual. And again, it shows the importance of annuals to comic book series.
Yes.
So yeah, definitely check it out. Definitely get it. It's a good, worthy read. So now we do have comics coming out later this week, though. Speaking of annuals, including the Dr. Aphra annual #2, which is going to be nuts because there was a short preview of this, and wow, we've got a Trandoshan in it as well as Dr. Aphra, and it is going to be so, so good.
It's going to be very... We're enjoying that book so much, very, I can't imagine that it's going to be anything but fun.
Yeah, Cy Spurrier is writing this one, and it's just, it looks... You can check the preview of it on our Twitter feed, and you can see the first four pages, and I think you're going to be hooked on it. It's going to be really entertaining. And then, of course, we also have Star Wars #53, which is part 4 of the Hope Dies arc. And this has got the great cover because it shows Han Solo in the Rebel flight suit, and he's getting into an X-Wing, it looks like. Now, whether he's actually getting into it or not, we'll find out, but we'll see what happens. I'm really enjoying it. And this Hope Dies has been a good one.
I agree. I'm really enjoying this one as well. So we got those books for next week, and other than that, is there any comic book noob coming out that we need to be aware of?
We're doing one later this week. Stick around. Watch the Comic Book Noob Twitter feed for the subject. It's going to be a bit of a surprise, but I think it's going to be a fun surprise.
All right, cool. Well, over on Talking Toys with Taylor and Jeff, Taylor and I are discussing the Terminator 2 toy line, because what ultra-violent film rated R shouldn't have a toy line aimed at kids? We had a lot of fun with that. Do you have any podcast recommendations this week for anybody who might be looking for something extra to listen to?
Oh, gosh. Oh, my, oh, my. Of course. Yes, I do, actually. This is a bit of a mainstream podcast, but it's a fun one. It's called Imaginary Worlds.
Oh, yeah. And I've actually had the host on Bantha Banter.
Have you? You have? Yeah. His name just walked out of my head here. Eric Molinsky. Eric Molinsky.
Yes, Eric Molinsky. Really good show. Really well produced as well.
Yeah, the episodes come out every 2 weeks, and it's about science fiction and fantasy genres. And he takes a nice dive into these things, examining them, and not just works of fiction, but he did one where a while back where he learned how to play Dungeons and Dragons, and then the most recent episode I think that it was released, he revisited the episode, but what he did is he 3 years after the fact. And he was talking to the people that he's been playing D&D with for 3 years now. And it's just, it's very down to earth. And it just, it shows how much fun the game can be. You know, the other ones are, he just looks at things that, the role of heroines, for example, he did a great one talking about the writer Octavia Butler, who's this amazing science fiction writer that people weren't really aware about when she was actively writing. But, now they know how good she is. So definitely check it out. You can find it at imaginaryworldspodcast.org.
And he has done a series of Star Wars episodes as well. So that's how he ended up Bantha Banter. So, yeah.
Because I think he did Han Shot first. He's done more of that as well. So
really, it's really good cool stuff. Show. I would like to humbly suggest, not even humbly, a podcast that I've been listening to for years called Script Notes. It's hosted by John August and Craig Mazin, who are very successful screenwriters. John August wrote Go and Big Fish, and Craig Mazin does more mainstream work. He's written the Hangover trilogy. And he has a new series coming out about Chernobyl that should be interesting. And they bill it as a podcast about screenwriting and things that are interesting to screenwriters. I am not a screenwriter, but I find it fascinating because they dive into all aspects of movie making and they have enough experience and knowledge of it to speak with a lot of authority. And their conversations are just very interesting. And they've done some deep dives. They've done a few episodes where they have devoted an entire episode to a particular screenplay. They've done one on the Raiders of the Lost Ark script, as well as The Little Mermaid, where they just sort of dissect it and talk about why it works and what about it works and why that works. It's just really fascinating. So if you are looking for something to listen to, that comes out every Tuesday. And they have about 200, over 200 episodes out. So, yeah.
I'll definitely check that out then. That would be great.
Cool. All right. And as always, thank you for listening to this podcast. And Matt, thank you for joining me this evening.
As always, thank you for having me.
And until next time, for Comics with Kenobi, I'm Jeff.
I'm Matt.
And may the Force be with you.
Always!
Comics with Kenobi's theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy.
Bud, stop peeing!